ICEA Gear has outfitted over 10,000 bow hunters across the country, and we're continuing to raise the bar when it comes to bow hunting camo. New for the 23 season, we introduce our never-before-seen panel fabric system designed to be dead quiet, along with our patent-pending bow hunting collar. ICEA Gear. Features and function built for bow hunters by bow hunters. Learn more at asiogear.com.
Welcome to Bear Bow Hunter Podcast with your host, Nate Bailey, where we look to the ancient paths of our hunting ancestors to guide our future, where woodsmanship and hard work outweigh advanced shooting devices, where we value those who have gone before us and welcome those who are yet to come. Join us as we exchange valuable insight about the Bear Bow Hunter's lifestyle. Welcome to another edition of Bear Bow Hunters Podcast. In today's podcast, we are going to look into something that we've looked into before, but I have some greater insight in some of Dr. Ashby's, some of his reports on the perfect arrow, some of his studies into the perfect arrow. And I want to add my two cents in on how I've seen what he's put to paper work in the field for me. But before we do that, I want to talk about something else that I'm really excited about this year that I put over 100 miles on so far during the scouting season, and that is the LaCrosse Ursa boot and the Ursa MS boot. Now, these boots, you guys, were created by LaCrosse for the states like, you know, Oregon, Idaho, Alaska, Utah, Nevada. They were in collaboration. They took a team of hunters, and they started building this boot from the ground up, and they gave them to the team of hunters. And over 5 years, these guys would put them through their paces. And if they found something that was wrong, they would go completely back to the drawing board. And you would think that that's how LaCrosse would handle things because, you know, they've been in the boot business for over 125 years. And, you know, they've put a lot of what they know into the boots, into the Ursa. It is, man, it's probably, it's a big game, Western, you know, high mile, high load boot. And they've done it right. I've got well over 100 miles on this thing, and I really love this boot. And one of the reasons I love the boot is because it's got the premium leather. It's called TecTuff leather. They've got infused leather. And then it's got super fabric panels, and the super fabric panels allow it to breathe. I've always had problems with the full leather boots, but I want them for the durability. And the Ursa puts the leather in the right spots and then puts the super fabric panels in the right spots. And those panels allow it to breathe, yet it's got all the durability of the leather. Of course, it's got a waterproof Gore-Tex liner and a full hex guard rubber rand. And you know what a rubber rand is? It's that rubber piece that goes around the bottom of the boot, just up on top of the sole. Well, that rubber rand protects your feet from water and mostly from the scree. That's why I like a rand boot. It's hard to find a boot that's this light that has a full rubber rand. Another thing about this rubber rand on the Ursa is where they put it, the seam lines up to where you're never going to touch that seam. I've had some other rubber rand boots, and it seems like that seam is always where you hit it and you open up that rand. I've had some do it mid-season on me, and that's not going to happen with the Ursa. Ursa also has the Vibram Mont outsole. It's got a molded footbed and the lightweight EVA, so that EVA is what soaks up the loads when you got a heavy load. So when you start packing, you know, your meat out, that is what takes up that load and provides the stability. This boot, for as light as it is, as breathable as it is, and as rugged as it is, this is one of my favorite. This is the favorite boot that I have had over the last five or six pairs of boots that I've had. And I put quite a few miles on it by now. This boot will help. It'll help. If you're a backcountry hunter, it will help you in the woods. If you want to see more, and you should, go check out how it's made. They have a video that shows, you know, what it's gone through to build this boot. Go over to lacrossefootwear.com and /URSA. And that's spelled with the URSA, but it's pronounced URSA. All right. Now let's talk a little bit about arrows. But before I talk about arrows, I want you to know the practical experience that I have in arrows. And why I'm a believer. And I'm going to put this on video. I haven't put this video out yet because I got such a poor shot on an elk in 2020. I showed a little bit of it. But I shot an elk too far back and angling backwards. So it was quartering to me. And I hit it far back, which is probably about the worst shot you could ever do on an elk. What had happened is Gage just killed. He killed his little spike, and we heard that bull still up there. He was raking up in the jack pines. So I ran up into the jack pines, and if you guys, I'm going to put out the video because I think it's really important to see what a good, well-tuned arrow that is using the same factors that we're talking about today. And these factors were brought to the archery world's attention by Dr. Ed Ashby. And we're going to talk about some of what he has found and then what I have seen through what he has found and why I'll never go back to a light arrow again. And it's not just because of what he said on paper, but it's because of what I've experienced. So anyhow, I ran up into this jack pine thicket, and I don't know if you guys have been in these kind of thickets, you know, and this is a ponderosa jack pine thicket. You know, Eastern Oregon has a lot of those kind of thickets. And I could see the bull, and he was rubbing on the other side of the thicket. And he was rubbing so hard. Each time he'd start rubbing, I'd run closer. And I got within probably 20 yards of him. And I got on the other side of the thicket, and I was not going to be able to make it through the thicket. So I let out a cow call. And that's all that did it, man. He turned, looked my direction, looked past me. You know, when I throw a cow call when I'm that close, of course, I'm going to throw it behind me. And so he's looking for that cow behind me. But I was kind of in this little opening within the thicket. And so he couldn't see any cows behind me. So he decided he's just going to come straight for me. And he did. And he came right through the pine thicket at me. And by the time he got kind of in foot in the clearing where I was standing, he was probably 10 yards away. And he came through the trees, and all I had was this frontal shot on him. Now, I would have taken the frontal if I thought that he would have spun and gone a different direction if I hit him. But he was coming straight at me, and he did have a path that would have had to run right over the top of me. So I really didn't want, chickened out is what I did. But so I was just waiting, and I was already at full draw, and I was waiting. And for some reason, I just thought the minute that he turns, I'm going to take a shot. And sure enough, he turned and started heading kind of parallel to me. But as he turned, I just rushed the shot too fast. I watched his front leg go. And even at 10 yards, he heard my arrow take off, and he made him spin that much faster. And so the arrow landed where I shot it for, which would have been a good shot if he wasn't moving so fast. And he spun, even at 10 yards, he spun, and it's almost like he spun right into the arrow, but it caught him like the second rib back or second rib to the last is what I should say. And I watched the fletches go all the way in, and then they kind of pop back out as he continued to spin. So it pushed it back out just a little bit after it went all the way in. And I know, so the arrow was angled towards his back offside hip. And I know that he, it soaked all the way up in there. So I know that it was a lethal hit. And I know that I got liver, probably part of lung and liver for sure, and then guts from there. And it came out and hit the other side because he started dragging that back leg. And I'll put this in a video. I have it in a video over at the Life Outdoors, but I'll do a whole video on it showing you the whole thing because I edited quite a bit of it because it just made me sick because it was such a bad shot. But I think it's important to see and to talk about why I'm shooting the arrow setup that I'm shooting is because this was part of that whole system. And so this was, on this elk, I was shooting a grizzly stick, 28 inches and, super high FOC, like over 30 and, 650 grain, 200 grain broadhead up front with a samurai broadhead, grizzly stick samurai broadhead. And the reason I bring that up is because when we go over the, characteristics of a lethal arrow through Dr. Ed Ashby's, through his research, you'll see that the grizzly stick was built off that research. Now, it doesn't hit it completely on a lot of different things, but they do the best that any production arrow ever hit out there. And the reason I'm talking about this, because I honestly don't think I would have got this elk if I'd been shooting my old setup. And my old setup, I shot a deer perfectly with that thing, and I had to track that deer over a mile. But anyhow, that bull, and you guys could run over to the Life Outdoors and check that out. I'll have it edited probably this week or next, but it'll be out and you guys could check that out. And I'll kind of go over the shot sequence and what I think, why I think the arrow did what it did. And, you guys could see it visually. So, that arrow broke that, upon further inspection, that arrow broke that back pelvic bone where it connects to the hip. There's a ball back there and it broke it. It didn't break it completely in half, but it broke it. And that's what slowed that elk down. That's why if that would have gone forward just a little bit and went through tissue, that elk could have gone for a long, long ways. But with that broken hip, there was no way he was going to be able to. So that's why I'm kind of getting on here and talking about these characteristics of arrows. But before we go into that, let me tell you another story. And this story, I finally ended up, that bull walked off. We gave him an hour and a half and we got on his trail and there was blood and I could tell that it was pretty far back hit. I could tell by the blood that there was a lot of liver blood in it. And I could also tell he did cough up some blood too. So I knew I hit part of a lung. And we tracked him well over 150 yards after we gave him, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours to expire. But there were a lot of cattle in there. And as we were going through there, we kept bumping cattle and that would bump him too. And we'd see where he lay down. And finally we decided that this just isn't going to work. We're just going to keep pushing him up the hill and prolong his suffering. So we backed out and came in the next day and walked right into within about 30 yards of where we bumped him last and he was dead. So it worked out. But at the same time, it was a bad hit. And I think the only way that it worked out is because I was using the arrow setup that I was using. It wasn't, and of course, the best arrow out there is the one that's well placed, but this was not a well placed arrow, and I still got the bull. So, with that said, I'm going to come talk a little bit about this other setup, the old setup that I used. And this is an old setup. So, I used some different setups in between, but this one was back in the old days. And this was on a deer that was quartering away from me. You know, the perfect shot, right? And I shot, so it was quartering pretty heavy. So I really kind of wanted to shoot, I wanted to shoot it, you know, a little far back. You always pick a little bit further back when they're quartering really heavy from you. And I don't know, maybe next time I'll pick a little bit different angle, but I shot it and I was shooting, I think they were wasp broadheads. They had the old conical head on the front and I was shooting it. Oh, I'm sorry. I need to go back just a little bit here. That elk, I was shooting a 55 pound bow and with that 650 grain arrow. with this deer, I was shooting a Cascade Falcon, and it was 65 pounds. And I was shooting the real thick, heavy aluminum arrows. Not heavy, but real thick. Oh, what's the word I'm looking for? Big round. You know, the super lights? You know, back in the day when everybody was trying to shoot the lightest arrow they could shoot? That's what I was shooting. With 125 grain tip, I think my whole total arrow weight was just enough to get me 9 grains per pound. Not even 8 grains per pound or something like that. It was super light. It was super loud. And I was on that kick of trying to get the flattest arrow that you can get. Oh, man, I want to say they were like 25 12s or something like that. Anyhow, I probably blew those numbers way out of proportion, but it was a very thin-walled and very fat arrow. And my ferrule, my broadhead didn't have a smooth transition at all, and I was shooting those conical like a wasp. And anyhow, this was just a little black-tailed deer, and I shot her back. The arrow went right up and it kind of missed the first lung, got the back end of the second lung, hit a rib, and then bent. The arrow bent when it hit the rib, and it followed it all the way up the front chest, hit the front chest, the front leg bone, and bent along so that like the fletching was still in the back through the one lung, just a little bit on that one lung, and then it bent and ran up the chest and came out the front of the chest. It had about 6 inches of the arrow sticking out the front of the chest, and that deer ran off. And that was late in the evening, and so we tracked it as far as we could until it got dark, and it was probably a mile away and just little drops of blood. And now, remember, this is the arrow that everybody was telling me to hunt with back in those days. And, you know, you want that flat trajectory so you could shoot long distances. And, I shot that deer probably 10 yards. But you could shoot 10, 12, 15, somewhere in there. It was close. And you could shoot long distance and you could flatten that trajectory, which is, you know, I've already talked about that in the past. That's a myth. Arrows all drop off after 25 out of trad bows, unless you're really pushing a fast arrow. Maybe you could get 35 with this setup, but at 35, it didn't carry enough momentum to do anything. Even at 15 or 10 or whatever I shot it at, it didn't carry hardly anything to break bones. It bent. And part of it was because of the broadhead I was using. Part of it was because of the ferrule system I was using. It was just the total opposite of what I should have been using compared to the elk that I killed with the 650 grain arrow. And that's really, when you're talking about experience, this is where the experience of having the arrow that is set up right, set up for hunting. Back in those days, man, I don't think we understood what we know about arrows nowadays. And so there's Dr. Ed Ashby went out, and I don't know if you guys know his background, but he did a bunch of arrow studies to get bow hunting legal in Africa. And I'm not going to go completely into that. If you want to know about that, go to the Ashby bowhunting.org, and that's the Ashby Foundation. And you should go over there because it's really cool. The resource that's over there and the work that he's done and the people that are behind it, it's all good stuff. But I want to talk a little bit about these two different arrows in my situation and talk why I think that the arrow where I shot the bull wrong and the arrow where I shot the deer pretty much right. I just clipped the back end. I should have maybe been a little bit farther forward, but it should have taken out more than it did. Why these two arrows perform differently? Well, there are 12 factors, And these are within the ranking structure of what it should look like, too. So these 12 factors that Dr. Ashby came up with, and this comes through years and years and years, and I will stand here and I will talk about just through my experience and what I've seen that that's true. And I'll read these 12, and then I'll go back and I'll talk about them a little bit here and why I think the things that I've done with the arrow setups that I've done and the animals that I shot, why I think this is a very viable way to set your arrow system up. The first thing is structural integrity. If you don't have structural integrity, you might as well not even be hunting. And that goes inside with that last arrow that I was talking about. The aluminum arrows don't have that structural integrity unless you get a perfect shot. If you hit something heavy or a rib, in my case, with the wrong angle, with the wrong head, it'll bend its way around in there. And as it's bending, it's taking up so much energy. And then second thing is arrow flight. Third thing is the FOC. Fourth thing is the mechanical advantage of the broadhead. The fifth thing is shaft diameter. Sixth thing is arrow mass. Seventh thing is blade edge. Eighth thing is shaft profile. Ninth thing is the broadhead to arrow connection. The tenth thing is the edge of the broadhead, or the edge of the bevel, I should say. The 11th thing is tip design. And last is arrow mass above heavy bone threshold. And that only matters if you hit heavy bone. But let's go back and talk about these things. These factors of penetration that he came up with make perfect sense when you really start looking at it. Now, the structural integrity, that's part of the arrow and part of the broadhead itself. Broadheads, if they even get a little bit of a roll on the tip, so you guys have probably all seen them, that'll impede your penetration up to 14%, believe it or not. That just a tiny tip bend. And then if if the broadhead itself bends, you got to think about how that affects all the force. When the force of the arrow is going forward and then you induce a bend into it, just try to think about putting a clothes hanger through a hole. Just take a hole, like a board, put a clothes hanger through it. It goes through pretty fast, pretty easy if you push it through. Now, if you put a bend in it, as you come up to that bend, it wants to stop on you. That's the same thing that happens when you lose the integrity of your broadhead. Like Dr. Ashby says, the front of the broadhead is still flying, regardless of whether it's through air or through blood or through tissue, it's still flying. So you got to understand that there's still momentum and there's still force there. So if your broadhead breaks a blade, or bends going in, or even has an arrow that's not properly tuned, you got bend in your arrow as it hits. All those things add to penetration or affect the performance of penetration. One of the other things too, we'll talk about it more in FOC, but you got to understand your arrow is always flexing. That's why you shoot a certain spine, is because it flexes a certain way out of your bow. The same holds true about how much it flexes when you hit something. So it's not just flexing when you induce, force to the back of the arrow, but also when you induce force to the front of the arrow. And so you got to remember that about arrows. And that's something that messes with penetration as well. So structural integrity, and that goes with both the broadhead and the arrow itself. Now, arrow flight, perfect arrow flight. Think about that. When the arrow comes out of the bow, it's flexing, and depending on how well you have it tuned with the bow, it's going to flex a whole lot more if you have it out of tune. Another thing is if you're shooting a high FOC arrow, you're inducing a flex on the back end of the bow. Now that FOC up front it does take a little bit more to get that moving, right? Because you have your weight forward. But understand that as it's flexing out, your fulcrum point or the balance point of your arrow is farther forward. So now you have more mass of the arrow affecting the stabilization of that arrow. So the feathers on the back or your fletching or your fletches are going to have more of an impact on straightening that arrow out faster because it's got leverage. Just like you put a cheater bar on a wrench, it's the same idea. If you're 30% FOC, if you're up that much further, then you have, 20% more of stability added to that arrow. But you want to get that perfect arrow flight. You want to make sure that you're tuned up. I've had some arrows that were so badly tuned they were hitting the target sideways. Have you guys ever had that happen where you see it hit the target and then it straightens out as it hits the target? Well, that impedes penetration horribly because not only are you not concentrating all of your energy on the very tip of your broadhead, you're actually having to create energy, the energy being sucked off of that thing to straighten it out. But you're not pressing on the very tip of that broadhead either. You're pressing with more surface area to hit the target. I don't know if you guys have ever noticed that stuff, but those are the kind of things that will, especially with the stuff that Dr. Ashby was hitting. He was, most of his stuff is real dangerous game. So you want perfect arrow flight. Now, forward of center. You want to put as much forward of center as you can. The reason I say that is because, for one, your arrows are going to straighten out faster. But for two, when you hit an animal, what happens is if you have a high FOC, you are not inducing any kind of, you are inducing some flex in the shaft, but you're not inducing near as much because all of that mass and weight is forward. And so the smaller amount of mass that you have or where it affects where you bend, it's not going to bend near as much up front. And so it's going to enter the animal a lot straighter. As an example, okay, so I got an idea. So as an example, say you have a 12-inch arrow that weighs as much as a 28-inch arrow. Which one is going to stay straighter as you push down on it? If you just took the arrow and pushed down on the floor with it, which one is going to stay straighter? The 12-inch arrow is, of course. And because it's shorter, so it's able to carry, it's not going to bend as hard, right, as the 28-inch arrow. So with all things equal except for weight, or all things equal except for length, sorry, the 12-inch arrow is not going to bend as much. So that holds true when you have high FOC, all of your mass is up front. So it does. The back end's not going to bend as much when it hits. I hope that makes sense. Now, just think if you had all of your mass in the back, it's going to bend a whole lot more when it hits. I know it's kind of a weird concept, but if you think about it, it'll come to you that weight forward actually helps penetration. Now, the fourth thing that now these are in order too. So this isn't just, four things. This is the fourth thing that helps or impedes, depending on how you set your arrow up, penetration, and that's mechanical advantage of the broadhead. So this is basic. All you're looking at is a 3-to-1 broadhead, so it's 3 times the length that it is wide, is not as steep of an angle. Look at it like a ramp. If you were to walk up a ramp, and you walked up one that was longer and less had less of an angle to it, then that's going to be an easier one to walk up. To the point of, so if you have, say you have a 2-to-1 broadhead, you're going to have a third more penetrating power in a 3-to-1 than you'll have in a 2-to-1. And that holds true with you know, when you start adding extra blades to it too. And that's like a factor. And I don't know the factor level when you add another blade on, but it is quite a bit more. It actually, three blades mechanically impede penetration. I know some people want to shoot three blades to get a bigger hole, and it does. It'll give you a bigger hole. And if you're shooting at, you know, whitetails and stuff, you're probably going to blow through it anyhow. But this is a lot about talking about these big animals. And honestly, me, I want to shoot. I want to overkill everything. I want everything to be, I want to pass through as much as I can when I'm shooting them with a bow. So that's the mechanical advantage part. Now, there's a lot that goes into this. You guys need to go over to Ed Ashby's, over to the website, to the Ashby Foundation website, and you guys need to check it out, because there, and I'll include that in the show notes, but there is so much information on this. It's really a cool thing to really look at. Now, the next thing is shaft diameter. And how the shaft is built. The smaller or the thinner shafts, or the less diameter shaft, is going to penetrate better. Now, remember the old days and some of the wooden shafts where they were barreled shafts, and those are the worst penetrating shaft, is because when you create a small hole and then have to make a bigger hole without a razor head there, it's going to impede your penetration. Now, a tapered shaft, on the other hand, is completely different, especially a tapered shaft that has an outsert that mates to the broadhead ferrule perfectly. That's going to make things penetrate way better. And you got to understand that there is friction. Whenever you hit an animal, there's a lot of friction there. But if you just take a drill a hole in a board that's about the size of your arrow that you're shooting, Put the first part of your arrow into that board and just drop it and let it go. Now, the friction is going to stop it, right? So if you have just a regular parallel shaft, there's going to be a lot more friction as it goes back and forth. It's going to hit the sides and there's going to be a lot more friction. If you take a tapered shaft, it's going to drop through and not touch as much, so it's going to drop faster. Well, what that's telling you is there's no different when you shoot it through an animal. The only difference is in an animal, it's probably even multiplied because of the contractions of the animal's, you know, all of the stuff that goes on during the shot. Now, another thing here is not just the how small it is, how small a diameter it is, but also if it's got heavy FOC, then it's being pulled through and it's not being pushed through by the mass. So all of your energy is being pulled through. Take that same, those same two arrows, the one that has a high FOC and the one that doesn't, and see which one bounces through. So you know how they shake as they go through. Have you guys ever seen, like, I put bolts in holes that are really close in diameter to the bolt, and as they drop in, they kind of shake through and shimmy down through. Now, you take and say you had majority of the weight on the front end of that, it's going to pull that bolt through and not shimmy through there near as bad. So FOC helps in that respect, along with the shaft diameter. The next thing is the blade edge finish, which means, you know, if you put a serrated blade out there, I mean, it kind of goes to say serrated blades get plugged up, and once they get plugged up, they just don't want to move through anything. You know, I just been drywalling my house, and I have to clean the drywall off of my blade every so often because all the nicks and stuff that I put in that utility knife blade catch as you're trying to cut that. You know, you score it and then you break it and then you cut the backside. Well, it catches when it's cutting the backside if you don't keep that blade clean. Well, it's the same thing with broadheads. They're exactly the same thing. It'll catch and it won't slide through and cut as it's going. So if you keep that blade edge clean and stroped and just as sharp as you could keep it, you're going to get better penetration. Shaft profile, we've already talked about that. I mean, parallel shafts compared to, you know, a tapered shaft. Broadhead to arrow silhouette is what Dr. Ashby calls it, but it's what is where the ferrule lines up with your insert. And the arrows that I shoot, and this is the reason I shoot Grizzly Stick, is because they've taken these factors and factored them into an arrow that they built. Now, that's not cheap by any means, but at the same time, when you're talking, you know, the shot of a lifetime or an elk or whatever it is, people spend a lot of money on clothes, a lot of money on lots of different things, and then try to get as cheap as they can on their arrow and arrow setup. It just makes no sense to me. But Grizzly Stick has taken all these things in account, and that's what they put into their arrow systems. And that's why I love them. I don't think that I'll go back to anything other than a Grizzly Stick. I just love the way that they have been put together. But this arrow and broadhead silhouette on their stuff, so they have an outsert that's a brass outsert, and then they have a pin weight system that goes up inside the arrow. But the outsert matches their broadhead perfectly. I mean, like machine matched. You guys, if you've ever seen them put together, they are very, very good looking. But they do this not just to make them look good, but they actually penetrate way better. Now, the second thing is the type of the edge bevel. So when you're entering, this is kind of a weird thing that you got to think about. When you're, if say you have a two-edged broadhead, so a two-bevel broadhead, say like an old Magnus or something like that. Well, you have to, mechanically, you have to overcome both of those inclined surfaces. You gotta overcome both of those. Now, if you only have one, you only have to overcome the one inclined surface. And what that means is you're going to get twice the amount of penetration for the amount of force on the back of the broadhead. And so that's why I like to shoot single bevel broadheads, is because that bevel penetrates better. Not only does it only penetrate better, but it also turns as it's going through. And when it hits heavy bone, it's going to break the bone. It's going to twist and break the bone rather than glance or something like that. Like that second arrow that I talked about on that deer. That the reason that did that is because it had that conical head on the front of it. That broadhead, I don't know if you've ever seen a wasp broadhead, but they have a conical head, which is really sharp. But once you get past that sharp head, it's just guiding that arrow. It's going to bounce off. It's like a ball in there. It's going to bounce everywhere. And that exactly did that, man. It made that arrow, it twisted that arrow in such a weird looking shape that, and as it's twisting that arrow, of course, you know what you're losing? You're losing all of that energy in that arrow that the bow put into the arrow. And that goes with the tip design. That's number 11. A tip design that way was horrible. I don't know what they were thinking. Any kind of tip that has a rounded edge, even the chisel heads aren't the best for penetration. They fly really good. So, I mean, you know, that's one thing that, of course, there's trade-offs in all this stuff. So you have to get what you can live with when you're doing this. But, yeah, that conical head is not the head that you want. What Dr. Ashby found was that the Titano type tip, that one that has the edge that goes to another edge, that's the best tip because it doesn't break. Remember, our number one peating of penetration is structural integrity, right? So it doesn't do that, but yet it cuts on contact. Now, they took, Dr. Ashby took water buffalo skins, and they're pushing broadheads through it, and they're measuring how much force it took to push these through. And some of them, they couldn't even push them through. And then some of them with this tip, the Titano tip, with that tip, it took very little force to get it through. So that's how they did that. And number 12 is arrow above bone threshold. And the reason this is down so far on the this is so far down on the scale is because on that scale is only if you hit bone, and we don't really shoot to hit massive heavy bone. We don't want to. That's the thing that we're trying to get away from. But this goes up to number three if you do hit bone, is having an arrow mass above that bone threshold. And a high arrow mass, and we talked about arrow mass before, but a high arrow mass on the bone threshold is, we're looking at momentum, right? So if you have a high bone mass threshold, and he says it's 650 grains or more, that's what's going to crack bones. That's what's going to break bones. And especially if you have a single bevel broadhead with that Titano tip, it's going to twist in there and it's going to split it like a splitting maul. And that's what you're looking for. So say you got into like the shoulder blade of a big animal. I mean, like with the setups that I'm shooting, a shoulder blade on a deer, who cares? You're going to blow right through that thing. But like on a heavy animal, maybe an elk, although I've seen those go right through a shoulder blade of an elk too, but talking about like bison or maybe, yeah, like a bison or something like that. You want to be able to get past that if you accidentally get too far forward, or in my case, you want to break that pelvis if you hit it. And that's what did it, is shooting this big, heavier arrow. One, another thing about mass that I'd like to say is, with mass, the amount of it heavier mass accepts more of the energy from the bow. So if your bow is loud, that noise that you hear is energy escaping, and you want to create the most efficient bow that you could shoot. And that's how you do it, is by shooting a heavy mass arrow. And I know it slows your arrows down, and it's going to, if you're shooting a compound, it's going to widen your ping gaps a little bit. And if you're shooting a trad bow, you're not going to be able to shoot over, you know, like 25 yards. And if you don't look at a couple back, I did an arrow trajectory. I talked about arrow trajectory and how we should keep our shots under 25 yards with the heavy arrows that we're shooting, and even the lighter arrows, because the arrows fall off after 25 so much that it's really hard, unless you're like a gap shooter or something like that. So those are the things that I saw firsthand in both of these hunts, and I hope they help you. And if there's something on here that I've said that kind of confused you, I went through it really fast. I would suggest you go over to Dr. Ed Ashby's, over to their website, the ashbybowhunting.org. That's the foundation. I suggest you go over there and check it out and see firsthand the results of his tests. I'm just here to tell you what I found on my side of things and how they worked with what I did. And I gave you some real world situations where I guarantee you, if I shot that little deer with the 650 grain grizzly stick that was set up under these guidelines, I would have probably shot right through that shoulder blade and stopped that deer probably right there. And it would have not hit a rib and gone up that direction. It would have just pile drive straight through. So hopefully that helped you guys out. And as we're looking, elk season just a couple weeks away, and I hope you guys got your stuff set up. But I'll tell you what, Grizzly Stick, is the only arrow company that I know that have taken these, 12 penetrating factors and built an arrow for them. Now that doesn't mean that every one of their arrows is 650 grains on the setup, but they do build it, with these ideas in mind. And then of course I wanted mine set up with a 650 grain setup just because, I've seen it work. When you break that joint, you know, the ball joint, the pelvic right by that ball joint, oh man, with a 50, I was pulling, probably around 53 pounds. That's saying a lot. And I know it was a close range shot, you know, 10 yards is pretty close, But at the same time, that's breaking a lot of bone. So that's why I shoot the arrow that I shoot, and that's why I think it's the perfect setup. If you have any questions, feel free to get a hold of me, and we could talk this over. I know there's some people skeptical of this stuff, but you'll be skeptical until you make a bad shot, and then you see it actually work. So go check out the YouTube video. Until then, I hope you guys have got something out of this podcast and it wasn't just some rambling. I tried to keep my thoughts together, but it's really hard to do when you go through a list like that. And there's so many different things that Dr. Ashby talks about that are so much beyond what I know. And you need to really go over and see what he has put together. So with that said, shoot straight. I hope you have a good season. Take care. Thanks for joining us for another installment of the Barebow Hunter Podcast. Remember, we couldn't even be talking about this stuff if it wasn't for our public land. So go and support the people that are protecting it, backcountry hunters and anglers and TRCP. Also, if you'd like to see more of Barebow Hunters, go to our Facebook group, go to our Instagram at Barebow Hunters, like us, and hashtag all of your photos with your Barebow goodness in them, Barebow Hunter. We have a website as well. You can go over there, check out the rest of the podcast. We have videos, we have t-shirts and hats. Thanks again. Until then, shoot straight.